come, Mr. Bond. You enjoy spoiling films as much as I. And now it's your turn to spoil the man with the golden gun.
This is Diabolical, the comedy podcast where four long-suffering friends dissect film's most dastardly schemes, then try to improve them. I'm your host, Ben, and this week our sights are set on James Bond classic, The Man with the Golden Gun. So assemble some seemingly innocent items into a deadly weapon, slap on a rubber third nipple, and let's get diabolical. Hello and welcome. Joining me in today's mission are the usual suspects of cinematic sabotage, otherwise known as the Panel of Peril. Introduce yourselves and tell us, if you were a Bond girl, what would your name be and what would be your specialty? Adam, please kick us off.
Hello, Peril Pals. This is Francis Dickmore. My friends call me Fanny. Fanny Dickmore. My special skill is languages, and I've been described as a cunning linguist.
Ooh.
Very nice.
That's
actually in one of the Bond films, isn't it?
The cunning linguist language.
One of the Brosnan ones.
Well, Craig, since you've hijacked the mic.
Hi, Power Pals. Craig here. My Bond girl name would be Pierce Bosoman. Pierce Bosom. And my speciality would be slipping into an Irish accent for no reason every now and then.
The best.
Hello, the best. Speaking, and my Bond girl name is Jemima Puddlefuck. And my speciality is having sex in swimming pools, jacuzzis, bidets, etc.
Bidets.
She'd have just left it at having sex. That would have been great.
Well, that's a good start. Well, my Bond girl name is Penetration. And I'm a tech genius with a penchant for breaking barriers.
Oh, my diamond.
Well, later we'll compete to see who can come up with the deadliest evil scheme to earn precious Peril points for the Season 5 leaderboard. But first, let's delve into this week's movie. Released in December 1974, The Man with the Golden Gun sees Roger Moore return for his second outing as the suave and unflappable James Bond. In this installment, Bond faces off against Francisco Scaramanga, a hitman who possesses the titular gun and charges $1 million per kill. But it's not just Scaramanga's marksmanship that's golden. His energy crisis-solving Solex agitator is also worth far beyond its weight in gold. Despite earning $97 million at the box office against a budget of $7 million, the film sits among the four lowest performers in the franchise. Critics and fans too were divided, with some calling it the most sexist and limpest script of a lot, while others praised the performances of screen legend Christopher Lee as a calculating Scaramanga and his irrepressible sidekick Nic Nac, played by the charismatic Hervé Villechaize. To me, it's a Bond film that, despite its flaws, holds a special place in my heart. Alongside the performances of Lee and Villechaize, the image of Scaramanga assembling the golden gun before a kill is indelibly etched into my memory, and I'll never forget the hours of multiplayer madness on the N64's GoldenEye after unlocking the iconic weapon. But what did the panel think? Craig, was this film a bullseye or just bullshit?
Well, like you, it holds kind of a special place in my heart. It was one that I watched a lot growing up. And the indelible image in my mind is of the
third nipple.
Roger Moore waxwork.
Uh-huh.
That's the one that always stuck with me, that waxwork. I was kind of fascinated by waxwork when I was younger.
How have I never known this about you?
And yeah, the third nipple thing, because my brother has a superfluous third nipple. So we always found that quite funny when we watched The Man with the Golden Gun. We talked about it a lot. But I have to say, on this watch, I found this quite tedious. I thought it was really limp, as people have said. I fucking hate that stupid American sheriff guy.
It's my favourite part.
Yeah, he's great.
Well, boy, howdy.
God damn.
Good God. And that stupid fucking slide whistle when they do that car stunt. Yeah. Oh, I almost threw it.
It's funny you mentioned that because I got a fact about that. So John Barry disliked the score on this film in general.
Yeah.
Having only 3 weeks to complete it. And he says it's the one he hates the most because he just never got it quite right. He also greatly regretted adding a whistle to the barrel roll stunt. Guy Hamilton, the director.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's back. I'm down. Everybody, it's back.
I'm down.
Back down.
There you go.
Guy Hamilton also agreed that it's a terrible idea.
Like, who the fuck constructed that twisted bridge? It's really quite solid. You know, it takes the car's weight without buckling as it goes up. What was it? What was that bridge before it collapsed? Yeah, it's so stupid. And Moore's impersonation of that guy is dreadful as well, just before they do the stunt. But it perked up for me considerably when Bond got to Scaramanga's Island.
Yeah.
I thought it got a lot better then. And it's hard not to compare everything against the yardstick of Moonraker now because it was so fucking great. But this feels like it was made by a completely different production house. It pales in comparison in every respect for me.
It's strange, isn't it? Yeah. But it's the same director as Goldfinger, which was obviously the first film we reviewed.
Yeah, and do you know what else is really weird about that? Goldfinger has that excellent Aston Martin car chase through the woods. Having said that, it does take place largely in pitch black at night. But the car chase in this I found like intriguingly dull.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like there was any stakes or tension. It didn't feel frenetic in any way. It just looked like a very sort of sensible series of...
Like by the numbers type
cliche
thing, wasn't it?
Car stunts, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the same, except for the barrel roll, which did stand out.
Yeah, it's really amazing, the barrel roll, but they ruin it with the sound effect and the whole sequence leading up to it.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement there. Adam, what did you think?
Well, I'm the opposite. I really like The Man with the Golden Gun. It's one of the ones I remember from Sunday afternoons on ITV being on regularly.
Yeah,
I like it, and I think a lot of people don't like it, and why it didn't do particularly well is because it's the least gadgety Bond. He doesn't have any gadgets. From what I remember, really, he's the only thing he gets is he uses the radar in the plane to track down the tracker device, doesn't he, to the island at the end.
It's Scaramanga that has the gadgets, isn't it? He has the car, plane, and the golden gun.
Yeah,
the tables are turned.
Yeah,
from the start, it's like it's mano a mano, isn't it? And that's what you think it's going to go like.
Yeah,
but as it evolves, obviously, it becomes slightly different. So it's not Scaramanga that's instigated all this. But I like that, and I like the baddie's sort of seems the baddie has the upper hand. And he's also played by one of the greatest villain actors of our time.
Yeah.
In Christopher Lee, who really real nails it. And he gets him, like you've alluded to, when he assembles the gun and then he delivers the line, it's not really a problem or something like that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So he delivers it with aplomb.
Yeah.
I love that. I actually like the boat chase. I like the car chase as well. And then transitioning into what happens afterwards. I like the whole plot that runs through that. You think it's Scaramanga is the one who's instigated it all, and then his transition from hitman into energy oligarch, he sort of goes, "Well, I've had enough of all this hitman business. I'm gonna make a load of money from this energy company."
Yeah,
I think it's got some classic Bond scripting.
Come, Mr. Bond.
What a line.
Coogan and Bryden's favourite.
Yeah.
You enjoy killing just as much as I do.
I think you've got two quite different Bond girls in Maud Adams and Britt Eklund. I think
Britt Eklund's terrible, isn't she? Fucking dreadful.
She's terrible in everything. I've never seen her be good.
I'm the opposite of opinion. I thought she's quite sassy and she flips a lid a few points. I think, that's quite kind of nice to see her sort of like biting back a little bit.
Panto flipping your lid, don't it?
Yeah.
Huff and stamp on the spot.
Yeah, that's it. It's funny. But Maud Adams was just like...
She's great.
You know, she's very easy on the eye, obviously, and she comes back later on.
Octopussy,
yeah. That's why they brought her back, wasn't it? They thought she was great.
For me, though, she didn't quite... I mean, I like, obviously, anybody who's
female,
fond of the opposite sex, then they appreciate her. But yeah, I didn't think she was brilliant. I really liked Britt Eklund. I thought she did a good job here.
Yeah. Really, I thought Maude Adams gave a much better performance in this as well.
No,
she felt much more like you cared about her death more. That's how I felt.
It was a bit more tragic, wasn't it? Because she was trying to escape, and as that comes out, that plot line comes out.
Yeah.
You feel for her a lot more.
It's quite a nice twist where you find out that it's her that sent the bullet.
Mm. Yeah, that's it. It's great. It's a totally different Bond, and I think that's possibly why lots of people didn't like it.
Yeah, I think there are some sags in there, and
yeah.
It's also trying to be something it's not. You know, it's kind of shoehorned the martial arts scenes in there to keep up with the end of the dragons and the kind of
craze for
the Hong Kong stuff. And then when it got to that island, as Craig said, it felt really Bondy.
Mm.
You've got the facility, the shootout, and then it felt like it was really Bondy. And
the abandoned laser quest park that he has for some reason.
Mm. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Wasn't that a feature of Moore's tenure on Bond, though, that it tried to shoehorn in whatever was currently popular, like Moonraker played on Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah,
true.
Live and Let Die played on Blaxploitation.
Right.
Even the modern one was basically trying to echo the Bourne movies, wasn't it? Because
it always does that, doesn't it? It catches up with the zeitgeist and then it remakes the zeitgeist at some point during every kind of generation of it. There's two films here, like you say, one's this martial arts film, and if they'd split it off and had the Golden Gun one that didn't have any of that stuff in it, but really gone all in on a different one that was a full martial arts one, I think that both films would have been the better for it. Having said that, I've written a note here that just says, girls are great, but I remember what I was referring to, which is that the karate student girls were really good. Their fighting scene was great.
Yeah, that was cool. And that kind of saved the film from being completely sexist, I think.
I think the worst sexist moment for me, I believe it's Britt Eklund's character, but I may be misremembering, is when he just starts slapping her around. I was like, bloody hell, where did that come from?
It's Maude Adams he does, yeah. He gives her a hell of a beat down.
That's not what I think of when I think of Roger Moore. That's more of a Sean Connery thing, slapping a woman around, surely.
Yeah.
Apparently he wasn't very comfortable doing that.
Yeah, no.
From what I understand.
Real life gent.
It didn't
play well with me.
Yeah.
And parts of this feel cheap. You know, you said the $7 million budget, but Tim was saying that Bond doesn't get any gadgets or many gadgets. One gadget he does get from Q Branch is
his nipple.
Nipple, but it's the wrong colour. It doesn't match his other nipples.
It's just a piece of pepperoni.
Yeah. That's so good. What a plan that is. What a plan.
He can eat the evidence afterwards, can't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh. M's face when he asks for it as well. Concrete. Well, Gaz, what did you think of the film?
What did you call me? Hold your horse.
Oh,
piece of shit. So sorry. You're a gentleman and a full-on rapist. That's how you pronounce that word, isn't it?
No,
it's felon.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, my opinion of this film is quite closely aligned with Craig's. I was coming around to you fellas' way of thinking and really starting to like Roger Moore's Bond, and I was really looking forward to watching this one with Christopher Lee as the villain and the famous Nick Knack as the sidekick villain. But for the most part, I was just bored. I didn't think the plot was particularly interesting. The Solex, I think a lot more could have been made of that.
Yeah.
It's not quite a MacGuffin, is it? But it's so sparingly used that it may as well not be there.
Its power's revealed too late.
Yeah.
You don't get to see what it does until almost the end. And if you'd known it could have been like a crazy laser all the way through, that would have had some tension in it. And I think it's the opposite with Scaramanga as well. You see far too much of him, so he's not mysterious and he doesn't feel like a threat in any way.
That's kind of what I like, though, that the pre-credit sequence being focused on Scaramanga was a nice change, I thought.
Yeah.
It's usually Bond finishing another mission, isn't it, is the typical
pre-credits.
Yeah.
So I quite like that.
And what a way to introduce a villain, by just showing his third nipple.
Hit him with a bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Adam was saying, Christopher Lee, fantastic as Scaramanga. Yeah. He's always great. I've never seen Christopher Lee phone it in.
No.
Nick Knack, I found quite annoying, if I'm being honest, with his smug
face. I love him. He's got such charisma.
It's a tragedy what happened to him as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tragedy.
Oh, okay. Well, I may Google that later, who knows. But I was quite keen on him actually getting chucked overboard in that suitcase.
Oh, yeah.
Film.
Yeah.
So when I saw him in the gibbet, I was quite disappointed.
That, I think that means that he's done his job well, because he is meant to be irritating.
Yeah, true. Yeah, good song by Lulu as well. Really enjoyed the opening theme.
He's the man with the golden gun.
But yeah, again, like Craig said, quite a big step down from Moonraker, our previous Roger Moore episode. I shan't be rushing to rewatch this one, but I am quite keen to get around to The Living Daylights. That's the one with Christopher Walken, isn't it?
No, of Eat or Kill. Yeah, I am as well. I was thinking the same thing.
Well, we're on Lulu. Before Lulu performed John Barry and Don Black's composition, which was used in the film, Alice Cooper composed the song for it, but it was rejected by the producers.
Buns out for dinner. The other thing that this film evokes, apart from kind of the martial arts stuff of the time that was trendy, is that Smokey and the Bandit thing that was kind of popular at this time.
Yeah.
And then you get sartorially Bond in these horrible double-breasted suits.
Oh, just dreadful.
I wondered if that was a little nod to the third nipple there, the double-breasted suit. I got one question that you might be able to answer for me, somebody. Why is Nick Nack carrying a tray that just has Tabasco sauce on it, nothing else?
Yeah.
Is that fun?
Yeah, is that Bloody Mary?
Scaramanga wanted it as kebab.
Oh, it could be Bloody Mary. Does that have Tabasco in it? Yeah, maybe.
I think so.
Yeah, I think you can.
Just wanted an enema.
Tabasco and Worcester sauce, is it? Something like that.
The whole thing, it feels like it was developed around the Madame Tussaud waxwork of Roger Moore. Like, they saw it and they're like, oh, what can we do with this?
Yeah, because Scaramanga's a huge departure from the book. He's a lot rowdier and rougher in the book.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not as much as a gentleman.
That's interesting. Does he have a golden gun in the book?
He does.
Is it called The Man with the Golden Gun?
Yeah, it's called The Man with the Golden Gun. He's more kind of gangster-like he was, but he did have the circus background.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe he's kind of like that guy that he kills at the start. He's a gangster, isn't he?
He's a gangster, yeah.
I'm sorry, Al.
He's been in another Bond film.
Yeah. He was in, oh, shit, Diamonds Are Forever?
First one with Spectre, wasn't it? Yeah. Spectre gets rid of a bumps a load of moth, doesn't he?
Yeah. Quite funny in the end credits that the gun was made by a company that makes lighters.
Mm.
Yeah.
What is it? A lighter, a pen? What's the other part?
Yeah.
Or is it just those two parts?
A cigarette case.
What's it? It's the three parts, isn't it? How much money is in that fucking envelope as well? Because he opens it and there's about $200 in there or something. He's like, half now, half later. What the hell?
$200 is a lot of money in those days.
Yeah, that's it.
Before I ask you for your highlights and favourite lines, we're going to play a little quiz I'm calling Come Come, Panel of Peril. I know you enjoy Jeopardy-like quiz games as much as I do. I have several categories for you containing questions related to this week's movie. You'll each get a chance to pick a category and answer a question thereon. The categories are: What a Guy, Dead On Mate, Dead On, No, and All Play, The Best of Best of Best. Pick a category.
No, I don't want to. Yeah, no, I'll have no, please.
Okay. Bond author Ian Fleming pushed for Christopher Lee to play the villain in the first Bond movie, 1962's Dr. No. But what was the connection between Fleming and Lee?
They both trained as NASA astronauts for Apollo 11, which is where Fleming got the inspiration for the film script, not the book, the film script that he didn't write for Moonraker. At that time, Christopher Lee was younger than Ian Fleming, but by the time they got around to filming Man with the Golden Gun, they were a similar age. So he thought that it would be a good idea to cast him in the film. And also they were cousins or something.
Well done. They were indeed cousins. Step cousins. So apparently Lee's mother remarried following divorce and they became step cousins. Mm. They're also friends and golf partners, apparently.
Mm. Well, what's going on there? Were you waiting for the Google results to load? Were you running off that spiel?
No, I knew. I knew the
answer. Oh, you knew.
Just doing it. Doing the rest for Jolly Japes.
So apparently by the time Fleming got around to talking to the producers, Broccoli and Saltzman, about Dr. No, they'd already cast Joseph Wiseman in the role. Mm-hmm. All right. Craig, could you pick a category?
Dead on, mate. Dead on.
Okay. How many people does James Bond kill in this film?
Ooh. One.
Correct answer.
Ah, nice.
It's one. Scaramanga himself. Mm. And a grand total of 6 people die in the film, but only one killed by Bond. And that is the lowest kill count of all the Bond films.
Mm.
Adam.
No way, man.
You pick What a Guy, because that's the one
left.
What
a Guy, or whatever it is.
You said No Way Man so confidently as well.
Yeah. I just thought you'd refusing to pick.
No Way Man.
Serial Bond director Guy Hamilton helmed 4 007 films, including The Man with the Golden Gun. Can you name the other 3?
Oh, fuck. Goldfinger.
Yep.
No, can't. I don't know the other two. Not even bother guess. Never Say Never Again, which isn't a Bond film, but I'm going to include it anyway.
Ghostbusters, which also isn't a Bond film.
And Highlander Part 2.
He did Diamonds Are Forever and Live and Let Die. And he later said The Man with the Golden Gun was the only Bond film he regretted making.
Oh, everybody hates this film so much. I just don't know. Why? Why? It's just a film, everybody. Just chill out.
All right, we'll go for the all play, since you're all enjoying this so very thoroughly. So long-time Bond producers Harry Saltzman and Albert Broccoli fell out while shooting The Man with the Golden Gun.
Broccoli?
Yeah.
Just pretending that's the first I've heard of it.
Saltzman envisaged a large-scale action sequence in the movie in which Bond and Scaramanga would chase one another from the backs of elephants during the stampede. Broccoli and the other members of the team thought this was a bad idea, but this did not stop Saltzman continuing to look into the matter.
It's like John Peters, as he called him, always wanted the spider in everything.
Yeah. Eventually gets it in Wild Wild West.
He was so intent on this idea, he even went as far as purchasing special protective shoes for elephants. How many pairs did he buy?
Oh, Jesus, right. So
2, innit? One for the front, one for the back.
4 for the 2 elephants.
I reckon you've got to have at least half a dozen elephants. So what's that, a dozen pairs then?
So it's 12 pairs for Adam there. Mm. Okay.
I'm saying 4.
4 pairs.
I'm going to say 8.
He bought 2,600 pairs. He takes his shoes off.
Madman.
What the fuck did he do with them after they decided not to film it?
Had them framed on the walls like trophy kills.
Took them down Camden Market.
The size of...
Sold them as novelty ashtrays.
Pair, 2 pairs, you pair.
Protect your elephants, folk.
Yeah, sadly, no sequence was ever filmed. The most notable elephants we got were made of wood in this one, I think.
Hmm.
All right, let's move on now to our favourite moments. Adam, would you please kick us off?
Well, I've got to say, it's the car doing this spinny jump. It's just great.
How it's hard were you when you watched that?
I was... Oh, thank you. And that's
hello.
About 5 minutes after it landed, I did the down bit, yeah.
It's a great stunt.
Yeah.
I was watching that car chase, and I was thinking, you don't get to see car chases like this anymore. And then that stunt is masterful, and that's
it's
why
so
it's
good.
My favourite bit. I think it's one of the most standout stunts of all the Bond films, I think. You know, they must have put a lot of work into getting that absolutely spot on. So... it's just really great.
Yeah, it just, I suppose if you've kind of allowed yourself to buy into the whole kind of farce of it.
Suspend my disbelief, yeah.
Suspend your disbelief, exactly, yeah. It doesn't have any kind of sense of, like,
no, it doesn't.
Reality. Yeah.
No, it doesn't, but then later on when he gets a wing bolt and a wing and a jet engine bolt to the top of his car, it's just equally as ludicrous. But that's what, it's another thing that I love about that movie. It's like, you know it's coming from a mile off. You just remember it and you're just like, I can't wait to see it again. And then he's flying around and they're going, oh, look at him there. He is flying around. And you can just imagine Scaramanga going, Are they watching me flying around in the car?
What's the steering wheel doing once they get off the ground anyway?
Still turning the wheels.
Yeah. We're not going anywhere. Hurry up.
Apparently that car, they built a full-size model, obviously, and that could fly a limited flight about 500 metres.
Really? I would have thought it just ripped the roof off.
No, I think it just got off the ground, kind of Wright Brothers style.
Wow.
Yeah, so they film it taking off, but then what we see in the air was a 1 metre model.
Very obviously. Yeah. It's not even the same colour.
It's like something out of Gerry Anderson, isn't it?
Well, it's not as well made as Thunderbird's vehicle, I don't think.
Yeah, so apparently that car stunt, they, as soon as it was performed in Texas in like 1972, they bought the copyright and the patents of the stunt immediately.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And
then they just had it waiting for the next film. So it was, the stuntman was called Bumps Willard, apparently.
Yeah.
And it was a AMC Hornet that they were driving.
It's a great car.
And it'd been modified to put the steering wheel in the centre.
Right.
It's a great car. One thing I did notice just before they do that jump, neither one of them have got their seatbelts on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, if it did that in real life, they'd be like, I'm on the ceiling, help.
Maybe would the centrifugal force pin you down? I don't know.
Good point.
Or the power of the whistle hold you in place.
Yeah.
If we ever make enough money, we can go back and do like a diabolical series of stunts and go, we're going to recreate the stunts of these films we've already covered. First of all, Batman with a Golden Gun, Twisty Car Jump. Let's see if it's real. Craig, over to you.
All right, Craig, what was your highlight?
Believe it or not, I've got a couple, so if we go around the hall, then come back to me. But the one that I've picked, because I just think it's such a fucking killer concept, is the base on the Queen Elizabeth
that
they've built the level floors into. It's just so mad and brilliant.
Yeah. It's brilliant. It is brilliant. Yeah.
You could imagine the British government doing that. Like, for real.
Well, of course, the most logical thing to do.
No sense letting the old girl go to waste. And she's right there in red Chinese waters, exactly where we want to be. I just loved that. I thought it was so Bond and so comical but believable, which I think is where Bond sits very nicely.
And the way they've decked out the interior with all the stairs that are going down the stairs that are already off kilter.
Right,
stuff like
yeah.
Just brilliant, yeah. I agree, totally brilliant.
All right, the best. What was your highlight?
As previously mentioned, really enjoyed the pre-credit sequence showing what Scaramanga's final game is. Going through this mad series of, there's Western Town, Gangster Town, there's, what is there, just like a Las Vegas bit. It's a pleasing level of silliness to me, just the right level of silliness.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you get all that Suspiria-style lighting as well, is really cool.
Yeah. And that there's just like the right hint of danger to it as well. It's silly, but he does come across as dangerous at the same time, Scaramanga. And of course, you see his golden gun basically straight away, cluing you in to what this character's all about. It's good. It's really good.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to echo you. That's my favourite part too. But for two specific reasons. One, as you mentioned, you see the golden gun, but it's in a crow's beak.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and he retrieves it.
Which is mad. But the second point, and the most important point, is that Scaramanga's navy onesie with white piping is fucking so cool. Oh my God.
I've called it his athleisure wear.
But he carries it off though, doesn't he? He looks
I'm not joking. I want it. Can someone Google that? Is that available?
Scaramanga's tracksuit. Wait a minute, I'll Google it.
Doesn't
now.
Uncle Rico wear something very similar?
Very similar, yeah. Before we go around the horn, we mentioned Lulu's song and it seems that we all enjoyed it. During the opening credits, was I the only person to see a bit of bush in that pond? I'm sure there's a bit of bush in there.
I think there may well be.
I think there's like a lily pad over a bit, but then there's a bit of bush coming out the top of it.
Yeah, well, it was the 70s.
It was bush everywhere in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
What about when that Chew Me is in swimming in that pool as well? And she's stark, isn't she?
Chew Me.
it's daft. Oh, Scaramanga's trousers, if you want them.
For a mere 6,559 euros.
Come, Mr. Bond. Yeah.
You like fine chinos as much as I do. All right, Craig, you mentioned you had one more.
A couple more, I would say.
Go ahead.
Maud Adams' dead body at the kickboxing. I think that's chilling.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most kind of awful things I've ever done in Bond, but so brilliant. Him just sitting next to her, no idea. I thought that was great. As said, everything perked up for me when Bond arrived at Scaramanga's Island. And I think one of the reasons is that Scaramanga is so, like, gregarious. He's obviously, for a guy who lives alone on an island, he's so pleased to have company and to take Bond around. And he's just, like, grinning. And you can tell Christopher Lee's having a great time there as well. I think he probably enjoyed playing opposite Roger Moore. I feel like they would have gotten on really well.
I think they did. And Roger Moore used to tease Christopher Lee about his role as Dracula. And then apparently they got on really well.
There's a scene, isn't there, in it as well, saying about Dracula. He's lying in his bed like he's in a coffin. Isn't he? In his brown sunken bed. And I was like, oh, that's straight out of Dracula.
I didn't make that connection at the time, but now you've said it, yeah.
I think Roger Moore would tease him about that. And apparently, while they're on the island, Christopher Lee went into the wrong cave or one part of the island and a load of bats flew out. And then Roger Moore kind of ripped him for that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Some other things I wanted to point out that maybe I don't like, but I thought they were worth pointing out. One being that in the casino, they seem to be playing Boggle. You know, they've got like that plastic dome with all the dice in it. What the fuck's going on there?
Sorry, is it what Turner called it?
No, it's not Sorry. Sorry's just got normal dice, but there's a pop thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Right, that's the thing I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I can't remember what game it was.
Hey, Peril Pals, it's Craig here. And the board game I was thinking of that has dice in a dome is called Trouble. Another thing that I think is really stupid in this is that the first time he goes to Scaramanga's employer's compound, where he has those plastic garden sumo wrestlers, but when he comes back later, they're alive and they fight him.
Yeah.
And just the ending as well, where M somehow calls Scaramanga's boat and Bond just makes him listen to him shagging goodnight for some reason. Yeah.
Proper pervy, that, isn't it? Make him listen. It's like being John Malkovich.
I've got another note that I made, but I think I'll keep it for the favourite lines. I have got a favourite line, and then I've got a least favourite line, because I don't understand it.
Well, take us into the favourite lines.
All right, so my favourite line is when Bond is told about Scaramanga's superfluous third nipple, and he calls it a fascinating anatomical tidbit.
And then, doesn't it, when after he throws off the third nipple, he says, "You must have found me quite titillating."
Yeah. He should have said, "I'm just going to nip out for a bit."
All right, the best, the best, the best. What was your favourite line?
My favourite line is Bond when he says, "I'm now aiming precisely for your groin, so speak or forever hold your peace."
That's great.
Adam, what was your favourite line?
Well, I've got to pick a cringy one, and it's where Bond has just been handed a bottle of wine, and it's got a funny name, and he tastes the wine, and he said, "I approve, not the wine, your frock."
Yeah.
He calls it your frock.
Well, my favourite line was when Bond was talking to the belly dancer, and he says, "You really do have a magnificent abdomen."
Yes.
What a line.
Yes, great. That's the first real standout line, I think, that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your thorax isn't too bad either. Wink.
Did you say you had one that you didn't understand, Craig?
Yeah. Go on. What the fuck is a Mexican screw-off?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an odd one.
What you might call a Mexican screw-off, gentlemen.
What's a Mexican screw-off?
Maybe it's some sort of defunct cocktail.
There's some weird puns. Like when he was there were the bloody mannequins. He walks past and he says, Grizzyland.
I didn't notice that. That's brilliant. I think it's a real shame that they didn't do, because they had the opportunity, they didn't do a Bust the Plane reference for Who They Really Chose.
Do you know, I was going to ask you about it, because I was sure that was in there.
It's weird that it's not, right? Because they've got the plane right there, and he's on an island.
I was sure it was there, like when the first guy was coming in, the gangster maybe.
Yeah.
But then I don't remember it from the film, so I thought, like, after I got through, I thought, hey, when When does Nick Knack say that? I'm sure you've said that. Because I've never seen Gilligan's Island.
Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island.
Gilligan's Island is very different.
Oh, is it? Well, I've never seen either of them.
No.
Scaramanga's plan is golden. Literally. He aims to control the world's energy supply with the Solex Agitator, a device that harnesses the power of the sun. At the same time, he is obsessed with proving his skill with a gun by beating Bond in a modern twist on an old-fashioned duel. The best, the best, the best. What did you think of Scaramanga's plan?
I suppose it's quite good, really, isn't it? He successfully gets Bond to his island. It's just that his pistol dueling skills aren't quite as sharp as he'd hoped they were. I think he could have made better use of the Solex obliteration ray. I'm sure he could have brought that into play, although I haven't in my plan saying that. But in the film, I think he could have made better use of that to eliminate Bond. I'm sure there's a very sneaky way that he could have used that, undoubtedly.
Mr. Bond, why don't you stand out on the beach there?
Or during that duel when they're walking about and Bond turns and Scaramanga's gone. Instead, Bond should turn and just see him sat in a turret, like a laser turret, just fucking fires at him.
Or what about this? When they walk 10 paces, Bond turns and Scaramanga hasn't gone and Scaramanga shoots Bond. There you go.
I did think that. It did cross my mind.
So yeah, half good in terms of getting Bond to the place that he wants him to be with minimal fuss. And then half bad for not finishing the job when he has quite ample opportunity. He falls into the old Bond villain trap of feeding him and conversing with him rather than just getting over and done with, doesn't he?
Popping him in the head. What do you think there, Adam?
Scaramanga never intended them to meet, and he does say that in the film.
Yeah.
So he has to deal with Bond through what Miss Anders has done, essentially. She sent the golden bullet.
Right.
Dragging him into it, and then that's when the Bond villain syndrome kicks in, isn't it? My ego, I'm the best. I'm just going to deal with this guy. Then I'm going to sit back and make shitloads of money and that'll be it. It would have gone well if it hadn't been for Miss Anders. But then his ego gets the better of him.
Yeah. It's strange, isn't it? Because he was very obsessed with Bond. That's why he had the mannequin in his front house.
Mm.
That's odd.
And he didn't have a good housekeeper because, you know, if he'd thought, well, I'm going to invite Bond around, better chuck something over the top of that Bond mannequin or maybe put him into storage just in case I mistake him for the original.
What do you think there, Craig? Was it a good plan?
Yeah, I was thinking along similar lines as Adam, and I'll take it a step further. Not only is bringing Bond to the island not Scaramanga's plan, neither is the Solex. He says to Bond that he doesn't understand the science of it. And he's really just an opportunist. He takes the opportunity of having the Solex in his hands to make money from it, take advantage of it. And he takes advantage of the fact that Bond's on the island to challenge him to a duel. But I don't think he really has a plan. You know, he just kind of bumbles into all these situations, similar to the employer pissing him off and he decides to kill him. That just happened. That's not part of his plan. That's just a reaction. So I think he's not a planner. He's just a reactionary.
Interesting. Well, I'm a bit torn now. Those are good points you've made. I think he obviously had the fun house. I took from it that he was training to beat Bond. In his mind, Bond is kind of the ultimate hunting trophy, if you like.
Mm. Yeah, that would have made more sense, but that's not how they wrote it.
Yes.
In terms of filmmaking, you know, the fact that he shoots the fingers off the mannequin and then when you see Bond at the end and you see the hand, you know that something's not right. That's really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of like it being his plan, Adam's right. Keeping that mannequin around was a bonkers idea.
Yeah, that's true. As the best said, he did get Bond to the island after he had to react. So
he was expecting him there.
He also did plan that awesome flying brown car.
Right.
So I'm going to give him 6 florets of broccoli covered in coriander. That's what they have in Thailand, isn't it? A bit of pak chi. Yeah.
Or did Nick Knack plant that car? Because at times you feel like Nick-Nack is the real mastermind.
Is the brains,
He's the one who guides everybody through the funhouse, and he's the one who hides the golden gun in the crow.
Yeah.
He's a good PA, isn't he? He's a good PA.
He's the one running the games. He's the games master, I think.
Yeah. Before we wrap up another thrilling adventure, we have a vital mission for you. If our cunning wit and daring manoeuvres have entertained you, we request you deploy your gadgets of choice and navigate to your preferred podcast platform. There, leave us a review as glowing as the barrel of a Walter PPK after a high-stakes encounter. Your support is our golden gun in the covert operation of podcasting excellence. Now it's time for our final duel, where we compete to see who can come up with the best alternative scheme to earn precious peril points for Diabolical Leaderboard. Scaramanga aims to prove his prowess by defeating Bond in a mano a mano shootout, but his overconfidence turns out to be his undoing. The best, the best, the best. How would you create the perfect conditions to eliminate Bond?
Ah, my current foe, Scaramanga. Of course, I knew about the Solex the whole time, 007 James Bond says, his eyebrow cocked cheekily, as was the style of the time. But of course you knew, my dear Bond. How else would I have known to enact my plan? Of course I knew that you knew about the Solex, retorts Scaramanga, with a sneer audible in his delivery, though not necessarily mine, as I am not technically a trained actor. Aha! You see, Scaramanga, of course I knew that you knew that I knew that you were behind the Solex plan, but then you already knew that, didn't you? Bond surmises. Naturally, Bond, old chap. The only thing that you don't know is the full extent of my scheme, of course, replies the nippleicious fellow. Of course, concurs 007 James Bond, licensed to kill. Then, of course, I shall explain it to you over a delicious luncheon of Eggs Benedict, says old sexy boy. And how does Bond reply? I'm asking you, how does he reply?
But of course.
Nailed it. Nailed it. Later, over a delicious luncheon of eggs.
Oh, he says, thank you for having me over.
I must do the same thing for you.
What was that up to?
It doesn't matter, really, does it?
That's what you get for audience participation.
Now that we are eating Eggs Benedict as promised.
I'm a man of my word.
I haven't heard Eggs Benedict for about a decade, and I've heard it four times in the last 30 seconds.
It is time to reveal my evil scheme to you. Oh, yes, far better than mushrooms, these eggs are, old boy. And I'd rather hope that you would reveal all, Bond replies with a mouthful of salmon and egg. And I shall! What is it that a man most desires, Bond? There's no need to answer. We both know the answer. A man most desires that in life that will afford him the most comfort. Bond simply cocks his eyebrow cheekily, as was the style at the time. Yes, I can see by the way that you're seated, relaxed shoulders, straightened spine, knees together, that you know exactly what I may very well have done. I'm sure that I don't, replies Bond in between quaffs of Bollinger, which is a champagne, I think. Allow me to explain. Whilst looking for some cat food to feed Knick-Knack at my local quick save, I saw it. Anusol.
God.
Don't you mean anus all, Snicks Bond? That's anus all. Anus all. I knew you wouldn't be able to resist, you single entendre spouting simpleton. It is called anus all, Bond, and I saw a veritable mountain of it in their reduced to clear section. Can you imagine it, Bond? Just try to conjure in your mind's eye. Stacked so high that it brought me to tears. And I imagined a world, a beautiful world, wherein a man and his orifice can live in harmony without one antagonizing the other, putting him off his daily tasks and so forth. Daily tasks, Francisco? Yes, your morning shave, your morning crossword, your morning picking an outfit, your morning duel to the death and what have you. James Bond 007 begins to absentmindedly scratch at his golden eye. Yes, James, it really is wonderful what you can achieve when hoarding vast amounts of Anusol, Preparation H, all of the rectal creams really, and by impregnating Eggs Benedict with rapid hatching anal lice eggs. License to Kill 007 Commander James Bond begins to frantically scratch away at his undernethers like nobody's business upon hearing this. They really are rapid hatching, just as Scaramanga said, and they irritate poor old Bond, James Bond's a-hole, like a son of a bitch. Now then, Bond, let's begin our duel to the death, shall we? Says the nefarious ne'er-do-well. If you win and kill me, then Knick-Knack shall give you the cream. Now do try to concentrate on the matter at hand and stop scratching, won't you? Scaramanga says with a smirk. Of course, replies Bond, James Bond, Bond, James Bond. His arsehole aflame with hands shaking uncontrollably. He already knows he has lost. Did you see that coming?
No, I thought it was going to be some more shit rolling, if I'm being honest.
Close, very, very close.
Shit adjacent, isn't it?
It's the crap factory that you got to worry about. Did he really buy all that Anusol, or was he just winding him up?
Oh, he really bought it. He's got a monopoly on the world's energy supply and a monopoly on the world's arsehole creams.
Henmoid treatment creams, yeah.
Ooh, tell you what, if you had arsehole itches, that laser's going to do a right straight, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To the left, Knick-Knack. Yeah. Up a bit. Yes, that's the ticket.
And Anusol can cure anal lice, can it?
Are you asking for a friend?
Yeah, I'm asking for...
It says here it's used to treat hemorrhoids.
First, you clear the lice off.
I've never heard of anal
and
lice.
Then you apply the Anusol to ease the pain caused by the lice.
The voice of experience.
I think this plan was written by a man who's never had hemorrhoids. So for that reason, I'm not buying it.
To be fair, he doesn't even need to go as far as the lice. Just a bit of sand down the crack, innit?
Itching powder on the seat.
Oh, those little buds, the itching powder buds. Remember, you throw at each other.
Yeah,
yeah, but you'd have to administer those rectally, wouldn't you? You wouldn't be able to hide those in Eggs Benedict.
Well, what if Scaramanga, while they're having lunch, Scaramanga's got one of those little buds in between his toes and he just starts rubbing Bond's crotch with it. Come, Mr. Bond, I know you like crotch rubbing as much as I do.
Jesus Christ.
Does anyone want to go after that, or should we just call it a day? All right, well, if there are no further questions for the best, the best, the best, Adam. What would you have done differently?
Look, Mr. Bond, we both have a gun, and we both have a tadger. This will be the ultimate test of our abilities, says Scaramanga to his nemesis. Bond raises a suggestive eyebrow. More out of curiosity than anything else. Just what the heck is he going on about? Scaramanga turns and leads Bond into his rather luxurious lounge to a little surprise. And holy smokes! It's only a load of very attractive women dressed in bikinis and giggling in a semi-tipsy way. Truly, Bond's only real weakness is his sex addiction. And the fact that he will have sex with anything that moves with two legs and a furry front bottom.
Even if there's another one in the cupboard.
Yeah. As the women spread out across Scaramanga's abode and through the funhouse, Bond and the villain begin their duel, this time with a few more distractions. Bond walks through to the saloon, but it's not the cowboy with the six-shooter that's got his attention. No. There are three women, all sat round the table, drinking baby sham, and a little worse for wear. Car! James fucking Bond! Slurs one of them as she wobbles her way over to him, as her friends laugh like drunken drain. A little early for drinks, ladies, says Bond. Well, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, darling. Cackles one with a fag hanging from her mouth. Bond decides to quickly move on, As he approaches the next room, the doors swing open and Bond unleashes a shot, narrowly missing a sexy lady and a bunch of her friends as they seductively dance around the Al Capone waxwork and his cronies. "Here, watch where you're pointing that thing," shouts one female. "That's what she said," retorts Bond, raising an eyebrow. The girls soil themselves laughing, and even Bond thinks that's a pretty good one and cracks a smile. Bond, not usually able to resist shagging a lady for this long, readjusts his trousers and tucks it under his belt, then carries on looking for his quarry. As Bond steps in the black and red room, there's music playing and numerous scantily clad women dancing around and having a slide down the slidey stairs. At this point, Bond is totally jonesing to make the beast with two backs, and his balls are starting to ache. In some discomfort, he ploughs on. One of the women is dry humping the leg of the waxwork of him. And then there's another dancing with Scaramanga. Bang! Bond hits Scaramanga right between the eyes, only for him not to move. And a second later, Bond's face is torn off from the exit wound of a golden bullet being shot from just over his shoulder by the real Scaramanga. This plan was brought to you in association with Madame Two Swords. When you've tried the best, come see the rest. No smoking or naked flames, please.
So, distracting Bond with his weakness.
Sex addiction.
Would Scaramanga really shoot Bond in the back?
No, he shot him through the back of the head, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Because he's fond of the sexy women as well, so he's filled the house with sexy women. So he sees that as an even playing field because they're both ladies' man. So if he can avoid the distraction of them all dancing around and doing things and having a good time, and he can beat Bond, and he can beat Bond, and that's it.
Yeah. I don't think Scaramanga's straight, though. Because he has Goodnight around, doesn't he? And he's not interested in her.
Yeah, but he gets that gun, doesn't he? And he rubs it all over Miss Anderson.
It's a bit rapey, isn't it?
That's not an act of love.
That's a phallic exercise.
That's an act of aggression.
Yeah, it's a phallic exercise.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you cheat on in. And when I say in the back, I mean, you know, not in anatomically in his back.
From behind.
From behind, yeah.
But I don't know. He does cheat. He's open to cheating, I think.
Yeah, because he's got all the different bits and bobs to try and get the guy to shoot his load.
Yeah, he's got Nick. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if there are no further questions for Adam, Craig. How would you create the perfect conditions to eliminate Bond?
When Goodnight arrives on my island, I insist she wear a bikini at all times. Not because I want to see her naked body, of course. I'm quite, quite gay.
Now we know why you said that.
No, it's because I don't want her concealing any weapons. She's free to walk about the place, and Nick Nack informs me that she's quite fond of my waxwork figurine of 007. It carries a loaded Walther PPK, naturally, so I'll need to keep an eye on this. Women are, of course, unable to operate firearms correctly, but I don't want to chance an accidental misfire, so I have Mr. Bond move to my bedchamber, reunited at last with the fingers I shot off previously, and now keep in a bedside drawer. I'll need to replace the waxwork in my funhouse, and quickly. At short notice, I'm able to procure a waxwork of my absolute icon, Wonder Woman Linda Carter. After spinning around in her outfit for a few giddy hours, I receive news that 007 is on his way to the island in a small flighted vehicle resembling an aeromobile, but with a simple cabin where the car should be. As Bond stealthily stalks his way through my funhouse, he is quite unable to stop himself from quipping something smutty as he sees the lovely Linda, flirting with the waxwork as if it were a real woman. He mumbles something about taking her for a spin, walks away, turns on his heels and walks back, apologizing for being tied up whilst arching his eyebrow at her golden lasso, then leaves and returns a third time to ask her if her landing strip is as invisible as her plane. It's child's play for me to locate the randy sod, and he has nowhere to hide from my golden gun. Similar thinking, that it's the mannequin that's his undoing, I think.
It's made me wonder now, like after scene's end, with Bond with ladies where he's quipping whether he does keep on coming back to add one that he's just thought of. Oh, one moment.
Yeah. They keep the best one in the edit.
Yeah. I like the use specifically of Wonder Woman being a gay icon. Obviously, Linda Carter's Wonder Woman being a gay icon.
I knew it had to be an attractive 70s lady.
Mm. That's a good pick. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, to distract Bond, you know, similar to Adam's plan there. But I also knew it had to be a woman that the extremely gay Scaramanga wouldn't mind having around.
But it was a waxwork, though, right?
Right, yeah. But, you know, he doesn't want a Farrah Fawcett waxwork because she's eye candy for the straights.
No, so what I'm saying is Bond, because of his
sex addiction,
highly overactive libido, is how I was going to phrase it, finds himself attracted to mannequins.
Yeah.
Good. Just remember that, all of you. That's been proven.
Okay.
It might come in useful later.
Okay.
At the very least, he would have to flirt with it.
Yeah.
At the very least. Let's just
establish that now.
It's like McLean is unable to go past that calendar in Nakatomi Plaza without touching its breasts.
Girls.
That's only a photograph.
Oh, not real. Oh, no.
No, this is just a photograph.
The real one is much more deadly.
So imagine that as a 3D, and let's be honest, a very good likeness. You know, that 007 one is spot on.
No, I'm totally on board. I just want to establish it now before I do my plan.
Isn't it really just in the film, it's just Roger Moore just holding his still spot?
No, it's waxwork.
It's amazing, though, to be fair.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't sure for a while. Yeah.
The Capone one's a real guy.
Yeah.
I think what had happened is two swords had made a Roger Moore waxwork, and then everyone was like, how do we turn this into a film? I think that's what happened.
He's the man with the waxy upper lip.
Come on then, Ben. Let's hear your sexy waxwork story.
All right. If there are no further questions for Craig, I will finish us all off. Knick-knack, with a mischievous twinkle in his eye, leads Bond to the crooked doorway of Scaramanga's funhouse. Bond steps into the dim, disorienting interior. The passage shifts and snakes, leading him deeper into the heart of Scaramanga's twisted game. Suddenly, from the shadows, a figure lunges. Bond's reflexes kick in, his weapon fires with deadly precision, and the silhouette crumples to the ground. A spotlight flickers on, illuminating the fallen form of Pussy Galore. Not flesh and blood, but a mannequin, hauntingly lifelike. Her recorded voice fills the room, echoing off the walls. Why didn't you call me? The question, loaded with accusation, hangs in the air. Shaking off the unsettling encounter, Bond presses forward, only to find himself face to face with another ambush from his past. Mannequins bearing the unmistakable likenesses of Honey Rider, Kissy Suzuki, and Solitaire suddenly encircle him, their recorded voices overlapping in a chorus of condemnation. Heartless, they call him. Insensitive prick. Each word stinging like a really stinging nettle. Despite his facade of unflappability, these words clearly shake Bond. He pushes on, the weight of his thoughts growing heavier with each step. Then, as if conjured by his own turmoil, an assembly of mannequins, each a spectre, of a former lover surrounds him. Their voices, a cacophony of hurt and regret, fill the space, overwhelming Bond with their shared pain. They speak of the struggle to rebuild, to find meaning and peace in the aftermath of his departure. Overcome, Bond collapses, curling into a ball as he confronts the guilt that's always been present at the edges of his consciousness. Casually strolling by, Scaramanga casually draws his weapon and casually puts Bond out of his misery.
Would this version of Bond have that much anguish about his former conquests? I'm not entirely convinced that he would, Roger Moore. Given that he's slapping someone around in this film, basically unprovoked.
You think of women as disposable pleasures, as Vesper tells him.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that the very thing they're berating him for is so true that he doesn't really care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think when he's confronted with it, he'll be trying to block it out, but then just, you know, seeing the faces, the eyes, regardless of what he thinks of women, when you're in that moment, you love them all, don't you? At the time. And that's with Bond. When he sees their eyes again in these lifelike mannequins, he'll go, actually, I quite like them and I don't know why I didn't call them back. What a prick I am.
Maybe though he went for a coffee with Pussy Galore like a week before he went to Scaramanga's Island and Scaramanga doesn't know that.
We don't know for a fact that it wasn't each of these women that dumped him after the credits roll.
Yeah, he can't hold down a relationship, can he, because he's always philandering. But Pussy Galore goes and lives happily ever after though, doesn't she? So,
well, the timeline's unclear, isn't it? Because, you know, some of the books were adapted before others. Dr. No, chronologically, is not the first book. So it's kind of hard to say, isn't it? But, and he's a secret agent. He's got a jet all over the world, hasn't he?
And the moment he does settle down, he gets his missus bumped off.
Yeah.
No matter the man, eventually the weight of the world comes down upon his shoulders. And I think once he's seen these lovely women again, it's all going to come flooding back. Those schemes were pube-curlingly diabolical. Now it's time to vote for our favourite. As a reminder, we had the best, the best, the best's anal solution, Adam's sexy solution, Craig's waxworking solution, and my own guilt trip solution. Remember, each vote is worth exactly 1 point for the leaderboard. No more. Come on, guys. But certainly...
No less.
No less.
No less again.
Yay. And let me remind you that you may not vote for yourself.
Monkey among the spanners.
All right, Adam, who have you voted for?
I've simply voted for the stockpiling. The best, the best, the best.
Lovely, lovely.
All right. The best, the best, the best. Who have you voted for?
Well, I voted for the plan what made me laugh most this week, which was Craig's. We call him Craig.
Craig.
Well, Craig, who have you voted for?
Well, I dreamed of a future where a man could live in harmony with his anus. And I voted for the best, the best, the best.
What a wonderful utopia that would be. Man and anus living in harmony. Just as Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney sang.
That dream can become a reality. £3 a month. Well, like the rest of you, I too dream of a day where humans and anuses can just get along. And I voted for the best, the best, the best. And I've drawn a little tube of anal cream there, spilling out onto the rug.
Tube of what?
Anal cream.
Annual cream. Annual cream.
Annual cream.
Apply it once a year.
The one and only, the wickedly talented.
Anus cream. So, the best, the best, the best. What has that done to the diabolical leaderboard?
Things are getting desperately close as this season. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Draws to a close. It's.
Weren't you at the back last week?
I was. We've had a bit of a change. So, in first place with 16 points is Craig.
So, not that you're in first place, that called Craig.
Craig.
In joint second place with 15 points each is myself and Adam.
Ooh. I'm at the bottom.
Ben's at the
back
bottom.
Back where you belong, bitch.
Only 1 point behind, though, on 14.
Oh. Holy cow.
2 points separating top to bottom with 5 rounds left.
Wow. Things are really heating up, Peril Pals. You're going to be wanting to tune in next week. Adam, as next week's host, we compel you to tell us what we must watch.
We must watch is next week a sci-fi classic. We're going back to gore. Real guts and blood. We're going to be watching Event Horizon.
Ooh. Which, of course, lent its name to a type of donut in the States.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, if you enjoyed this high-caliber discussion, leave us a gleaming review wherever you get your podcasts. For more explosive content, follow us on all the social medias at Diabolical Pod. Join us next time when we take aim at another cinematic spectacle, Event Horizon. Until then, keep your wine properly chilled and everything else warm. Well, while you wait for that, Craig, why don't you sing The Man with the Golden Gun?
If you want to get rid of someone, the man with the golden gun.
Bow, bow.
We'll get it done. Wah, wah. Wah, 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 wah. Well.
You know you make me wanna
shoot.
Put your hands up.
Shoot.
Put your glands up.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah.